You are listening to Around Comics, episode 206. Dun dun dum! Comics, the Comic Culture Podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. And this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. And right now, InStockTrades.com is offering our new book club selection, Tom B. Land's True Story Swear to God Archive Volume 1, for a fantastic 47% off the cover price. The first 17 issues of this six-time Eisner-nominated series are collected here and available to you for a mere $10.59. That's all at InStockTrades.com. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. Our roundtable this week is comprised of some familiar voices. First of all, Brian Salazar is back this week, as is Tim Seeley, the creator of Hack Slash and Loaded Bible, in addition to several other books. He's just been announced as the new artist on Marvel's New Exiles, which we'll hear about deeper into the episode. John Suntress drops by as well. He's the host of Word Balloon. So, let's jump right into the conversation here. We pick up talking about some stereotypes of comics and comics fans in modern pop culture. So, hope you enjoy the episode.
When the, you know, even on Entourage, which. Yes. Charitably had a Comic Con episode.
I remember that. That was bad.
Yeah, but that featured.
Well, that spoke down to us.
I thought so too.
Well, but honestly, I think Big Bang.
I want to have the nerd guy that's like, you know, because I know a lot of nerd guys, man. I work in the comic scene in Chicago. I don't know a single nerd guy that can play some mean game if he goes to a dance club. I'm sorry.
That man's name is Joss Whedon.
No. All right. Scotty Young.
Yeah.
Scotty. Mike Norton.
Norton's got game.
Nine Morton's got game. Tony Akins.
Sure.
Well, I'll tell you, Tony's like Tony's an international
player.
Man of mystery.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
Azarillo, he'll put a stake in your eye.
Yeah. I don't know his history on
asking. Well, he's married, though.
Yeah.
Oh, and Jill's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah.
Jill's like, you know, comic fan.
I'll put myself against any standard, white hat wearing.
Steve Niles.
Steve Niles, yes.
There
Niles
you go. That is your comic book player. Absolutely.
The comic book player award.
Wilkinson. Holy cow.
So,
holy cow.
So I just want, you know, right. Until then.
We're breaking stereotypes, man.
Yeah. Put some credit where credit is due. That's everybody likes to play it like, you know, no ass getting basement tomorrow.
Then there's Hank.
Then there's
Hank. And
then there's Maud. And right on, Maud.
Well, I tell you, we probably do need to give the last details because this is the last episode of Around Comics before
Holy
the
City
Comic Con. It is, this comes out on the Monday before the show. You still have time to pre-register, but it is this Saturday, October 25th at the Center on Halsted.
We will cut off registration on pre-registration
Thursday.
Thursday.
So pre-register before Thursday, and then you'll close that off. Yeah. 45 plus creators.
16 exhibitors, including...
And you don't have to pre-register at all. Yeah, I mean, you can go there and
$5
cash.
At the door. Come on.
$5, but cash only at the door, please. We don't take credit cards.
But if you pre-register, bastards. Then you get one of those sweet gift bags, guaranteed.
You're guaranteed a gift bag because we have them for the first 500 guests. So
make sure you invite the tranny population of Boys Town. We're in Boys Town. Trannies, please show up.
I'm open.
Free sketch for trannies. Free sketch from Tim to the
Trannies. Tim to
Dude, I'm dressing up in a tranny. I'm
so
showing
true.
Up in
free sketch for
like wait. The creepy Supergirl that always shows
up. You might
up
have just a line
free sketch for trannies.
You might just have a line of trannies, you know.
That would be the best day of my life.
It's going to be a great show. The next episodes that we do will be from the Windy City Comic Con. So look forward to that. If you're not in the area, you'll get a little bit of coverage that way.
Just to mention, because this will be the last episode that comes out, and we haven't had a chance to mention it yet, but we are trying to plan a sort of after party thing at a Chicago area bar. We haven't gotten it finalized yet, so we can't give out any details at
this
point.
Check the site. Yep.
But go to the website, sign up on our website. You can sign up for the newsletter, and I'll put out a, you know, when that information is available. I'll email everybody. It's WindyCityComicCon.com.
There will be an after party.
And
there will be an after
party
somewhere.
If you
we
say,
just don't.
I'm here for Round Comics. I'll buy you a drink.
Wow.
Deal.
Man,
you're giving away all sorts of shit.
Trannies and
Around Comics listeners.
Yeah. That could be a lot of drinks.
Well, I'm only going to be
there.
I have to go to a show after that.
He's leaving at 6:15.
So you got to be fast, motherfucker.
From 6 to 6:15, Tennessee will be there. Well, I tell you what, there is something that we want Around Comics listeners to do for Tim. And
yes.
this is something that came out a couple weeks ago. You probably saw it on the Newsaramas.
We want to harness the power
of the Around Comics
fan base.
Hackslash has run into a little bit of a legal issue that has caused some distribution issues. And like I say, if you had been reading Newsarama or the CBRs of the world,
I can explain it roughly.
Give us a little.
All right, okay. So here's the rough idea. When I was working on Halloween, I met a guy, the writer of the book named Stefan Hutchinson, who was a British dude, who happened to be friends with the guy who. Worked on the Reanimator films, which I was super excited about. I'm a huge fan of the Reanimator films, seen them all. So he said, hey, contact this guy. I was really excited. He said, hey, let's do a crossover. I was all about doing the crossover with Reanimator. I had a perfect story
now, this
in
is
mind.
The creator of the
films.
The films.
Here's a little backstory. Herbert West Reanimator is a story written by H.P. Lovecraft in 1920, I believe. It is now in the public domain. Which means that it's open access to anyone.
I could do a Reanimator story.
You can do a Reanimator story. So that was my belief. But I was primarily concerned with doing a story with the
film version
because I was a fan. And what I ran into was a corporation came to existence that had trademarked the logo and name of Reanimator. Which meant that my story was in violation of what they believed to be their ownership of the name. So this stopped me.
Now, the trademark was of the film?
No.
Or just Reanimator?
The name.
The word Reanimator.
Right.
Okay. Which is public domain.
Which is where the issue comes in. Here's what you find out pretty quickly about trademark and copyright law. You can – here's where the issue really comes in. Reanimator himself, the story, the ideas, all these things are public domain, which means you, me, everybody else here could use it. What happened was that when I wanted to work with the movie version, I ran afoul of a small corporation attempting to trademark that name. Now, it wouldn't matter to me at all if it wasn't the fact that I have to go through Diamond Distributors. Diamond Distributors has a hands-off policy towards anything in a legal issue.
Right.
Which means... the only way for me to get distributed through Diamond was to resolve the legal issue. I felt that the resolution to the legal issue was morally questionable. So Devil's Due and I decided, and with the support of Devil's Due to their credit, was that we would distribute it ourselves. Now, I mean, Diamond has to protect their own assets.
Sure, they're doing it because they don't want to get into a situation where they're...
But we felt like we were morally correct. And that just meant that what we intended to do then was we'll put it out ourselves. Now, that may make the book somewhat more difficult to get as long as people play along and really, you know, just sort of work with us. Diamond has okayed us to distribute ourselves. There's no legal issues there. That just means that...
How kind of them.
What's that?
How kind of them to let you sell it.
But what that means is that readers need to tell their retailer they want the issue. So basically, this may kind of be in a sort of weird way. It's sort of a weird democratizing of the current comic system because it opens up for a different sort of thing. On the other hand, retailers are already sort of stressed and have to deal with a lot of shit. And for them to have to be like, oh, I have to deal with another distributor, may be a pain in the ass. So what you need to do is if you want Hackslash issues 16 and 17 or you want to reissue 15, reorder it, you need to tell your retailer that you want to order it. Your retailer, if you are a retailer, all you have to do is go into devilsdo.net, and there is a special ordering section for retailers. The discount is, I believe, up to 60% off, 50 or 60% off. It's a very good deal. We will distribute it ourselves to you. You will get your books just like you were doing through Diamond, except it will be through Devil's Due. I think it'll be the problem that I've encountered so far is smaller stores are going to have more of trouble. Chain stores probably will not have as nearly the trouble to get the books. But if your store won't order it for you, you can still go to www.devilsdue.net and order it yourself as a person. We have one issue subscription available. We encourage you to go to your retailer. We support local comic book retailers. And we want you to go to your LCS and order it from them so that, you know, we maintain the current system that you go to your comic store. But if you can't, if you live in Bumblefuck and your store is too small to deal with that or
no offense to those who live in Bumblefuck.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Idaho.
Hey, I'm from Bumblefuck. I totally understand.
Stuckies and one gas station.
Yeah, now, why would it be more difficult for smaller stores? Just their internal system trying to deal with working with another
distributor? Well, the general, I mean, it shouldn't be difficult, but what you're dealing with is a system which has become so reliant on one distributor.
Sure.
That for some retailers to call up another company and say, well, I'd like this many, is just a little bit more out of their way.
It's one more step.
Yeah, one more step. They may be too busy. They may be not care because the book doesn't sell enough for them.
Right.
For larger chain stores, it should be very easy. In fact, so far, larger chain stores have placed higher orders than they normally do, that some stores would not get the
book.
Have
the online.
Right. Well, that,
how about the online stores?
The online stores, everything like that has been very good.
Good.
I just want to make sure that
is it going to be available through like DCB service?
Yeah. All the digital stuff, anything.
All
those people are essentially do their business the same way that your local comic store does. They put in an order of Diamond. They get a shipment. They ship it to you.
And basically,
same
this
system.
Is three issues. It's three
it's,
issues.
It's 16, 17, 15 is already shipped.
Right.
If you missed 15 and you need to reorder Hackslash 15, this is the way we have to do it. Our cease and desist included the issues of reorders for issue 15. So instead of making a deal that we didn't feel comfortable with, this is how we're going to do it. Yeah, I apologize to people. I don't want people to think that we're making it or that we didn't have the book on time and that's why we're late. The 16 and 17 have both been done for almost – 17 has been done for almost a month already. So the issues are done. The simple fact is we just do not want to hurt the case of the guy we actually made the deal with.
You're doing the right thing and
we're trying. I mean, obviously there's always going to be contention. I mean, everybody – I sent this off to Rich Johnson at Lion of the Gutters – in the hopes that, like, hey, Rich, I think this is kind of screwed up. Maybe you should cover this. And Rich, from his own legal background, this is what you find out pretty quickly about legal things and trademark and copyright and law, especially involving creative properties, is it's hazy. It's hazy at best.
Oftentimes it comes down to who can spend the most money.
Who can spend the most
Absolutely.
Money.
Absolutely.
Rich, who, and bless his heart, he always cares about the creators. That's what Rich cares about. In his mind, he thought, it seemed very likely that I was going to make it very difficult, and he didn't. And Rich very much cares about the creators getting paid, the artists getting paid. He very much cares about that. In his mind, he sort of thought I should have just taken the deal because So he and I even disagreed about this. But I know his understanding is always for the right thing. And despite what he sort of displayed in Line of the Gutters, which kind of insinuated that Hackslash might be doomed, it's really difficult to doom a comic book. You could do me, personally. But even I will keep writing Hackslash for free until I die if I have to.
Now, what
so it doesn't matter for me about money. So you can't doom Hackslash. You can doom me personally, but I will live in a box and write Hackslash.
You will build a box out of Hackslash.
Out of unsold issues.
If they are not sold.
I will do so.
What's the cutoff date for orders on that?
The cutoff date isn't exactly established yet because of the sort of flexibility of being ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to ship in a relatively reasonable time. What we have tried to do is we will call. We're Dell's do is calling what we have on a list is which of the top I believe 350 retailers,
okay.
Which involves chains. So obviously there's more than 350 stores. Some of those chains own seven or eight stores or whatever. We're calling the 350 chains or stores. Personally, we'll get their orders from them. So those will be very distinct. Those will be very easy. You know, we'll ship to them directly. Reorders should be very easy. It'll all be through the www.devilsdo.net or www.tinyurl.com/hack/hack/one word/
//
Yeah, exactly. Which was I kind of wished I named it something else by that.
Now the cease and desist, the legal ramifications of that for you is that being brought against Hack Slash? Is that being brought against DDP? Is that
no, I mean basically what it does
Tim's
is a
cast.
Yeah, a cease and desist is actually a very sort of an open ended legal thing. It's basically just to
inform you.
It's to the distributor to say, if you should pursue this route, we will take legal
action. It's kind of a warning
shot. So it was with
shot.
The distributor, though? It was to Diamond?
It's not to Diamond. It's to...
The world.
To the world.
Yeah.
And basically, if you should take this, that, you know, whatever. Because Diamond has to protect itself, and Devils Do, and myself do not, we are going to take the responsibility of distribution ourselves. Should we get another cease and desist, it won't be an issue. You know, because we will let this case figure itself out outside of us. Obviously, the ownership of the reanimator is not upon me to prove.
Right.
I made a deal with a guy who made the movie. That's all I care about. I made a comic. My comic is my major concern. I do not want to hurt the guy that made the film. That's my only other concern.
Sure.
So everything about this is going to be based upon the desire to get the book out to the readers. That's what I care about. I want you to be able to read the book. I'm really fucking proud of it. It's my favorite thing I've written. I have a great affection for the film versions of Reanimator. I have a great affection for the H.P. Lovecraft versions. I don't necessarily feel like I should have to recognize other versions if I don't care.
Right.
So the idea here is, you know, just to try and do something for the fan, you know, for the fans to be able to get the book, but not to endanger what we morally stand behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just go to the tiny URL if you are a retailer. I hope you order the number of books that you order through Diamond. You will not receive any sort of legal, you know, you're fine. There's no ramifications for you. You're a retailer. You're selling the book. Diamond has okayed it. Diamond does not have anything against us doing this. So,
Do you think that there's a chance of having kind of an inverse effect of the limitations on this, that the buzz of this and the face to face or phone to phone contact,
the controversy of it
that may actually
boost
create some interest.
I mean,
boost.
If I was a betting man, I wouldn't put my bets on that. I would never have done it for that. I would never done it to
well,
create
obviously,
controversy.
I mean, yeah.
But I don't. I guess what I feel like the likely thing is that, you know, horror fans are savvy people. You know who is responsible for the things you love. You know that the guys who made the original films that, you know, inspired you to be a horror fan, you're aware of these things. You know when it's not right. You know when it's not the guys that are responsible for what you care about. You need to vote with your dollar. You need to vote...
And speaking of voting, I mean, there is going to be a little bit of a bump in interest for Hack Slash because you are nominated for Best Comic Book at the Scream Awards, which is happening kind of at the same time as all this.
Which is the unfortunate thing. Is the bummer about all of this, and which really bums me out about it, is that, you know, we've just been riding a really good sort of path with Hack Slash, which was, you know, we were one of the few books, you know, in the top 100, which we actually went up in orders every month. We were doing this sort of like... the luck that, you know, like a book like Invincible or a book like Walking Dead had, which is where you gain readers. We were one of the few books that were doing that, and God, you know, God bless our fans for talking about it and spreading the word and all that stuff. So what this actually does is put a little crimp in what was a pretty great upward trend.
Right.
Because obviously at this point, you know, it's going to be very hard.
But that's why it's so important that if you are a fan of the book, that you go to your retailer.
Sure.
And if you have it on your pull list or if you don't have it on your pull list, make sure your retailer's aware of this, because there may be retailers that don't even understand what's going on or what's happening.
Sure. And the thing is, as easy as it is to sort of spread the word, there's still, no matter what I do, no matter how loud I shout,
only certain, so many
it's going to be hard for everybody to know what's going on. Right. Not everybody goes to Newsroom, and not everybody does all these things. We send out press releases, but still, you know, I mean, there may be stores somewhere. It's going to be tough.
Absolutely.
You know. What do you guys do in international sales on Hackslash? Does it sell well in Europe?
I mean, that's a weird thing.
Number one in Stad. Kazakhstan.
Yeah. It's actually very interesting because your diamond numbers, because they're distributed through one source in Europe, you only sort of get the numbers based on one thing, so you don't know exactly what your regional sales are. But in translation, we sell about the same in like Italy or something like that than we do in the U.S. You know,
oh, that's great.
Which is always a weird thing. I mean, I had it with Loaded Bible, where Loaded Bible sells better in Italy than it does in the U.S. or something. So it's like you never know. I mean, it's very hard for me to sort of.
Is this affecting sales outside of the U.S.?
It shouldn't. It should be the same thing for those retailers. Devil's Due can ship the same way.
Okay.
It should be the same thing. If you are an international reader, if you are in England, or if you are in Spain,
we have a lot of reader or a lot of listeners in the UK and Australia.
Yes, absolutely. This should be the same thing. Your retailer just has to go through the same venues that he normally goes through, which is say he has to order books. And I'm sorry, I don't want to be the prima donna. He has to put in an extra order for 2 months, just 2 months, for my book. I swear it'll be worth it. It's the best fucking book, the Hackslash book we've done. I think it's a good continuation of the Ryan Mayer film series. I think Emily Stone knocked her ass off in doing the art for the book. I think it's worth it, and I just need, you know, what I think all comic fans in general are sort of, you know, finding out is that if you like a comic, it's not enough just to like it. And, you know, any book that is not the main 10 books that sell, you know, in excess of 100,000, if you like it, you find out pretty quickly is that you become an ambassador, because it's very difficult to, you know, sell comics outside of the big
distribution. It's hard to keep it going.
Very difficult.
It takes a lot of sacrifices by the creators
The lazy publisher. Thing, too, is, and I'll say this for you, Tim, because I've seen you in action and everything, you do it the right way. You've been going to... through these crossovers, you've been going through the right channels, and you are of the horror community, and it's really a shame that this opportunist has interrupted this wonderful symbiotic relationship that you have with these movie people.
And Hackslash and Chucky.
Yes. Sure. Everything you've been doing has been fun.
I wanted to ask, because I don't know all the details, and maybe you can't talk about it, but the company that has brought this to light, or whatever, this company that owns the trademark, is this something that goes back a long time, or is this something recent that
they've
done?
Well, here's what you find out very quickly about entertainment law and sort of copyright and trademarks, is that a trademark is a very fluid thing. Copyright is sort of absolute, which is, you know, when it's even sort of implied by, you know, government rule, which is if you create something, it's yours, blah, blah, blah. That's sort of the idea. Copyright sort of plays upon that. Trademark, on the other hand, is fluid. Trademark can be changed over time. Mm-hmm. You can trademark something.
Superman logo is a perfect example of that. Look at the difference in the trademark from what it was in the 30s to what it is now.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And there's also
the S shield.
And there's also a sort of... because trademark is sort of a fluid thing, you can also... In the case of this company that exists that trademarked the Reanimator logo, what they're basically able to do is not necessarily to say we own it absolutely. It's very hard to say you own something absolutely. What you can do is pursue others who use it.
Right, because it's all based on infringement or perceived infringement on the likelihood or likeliness of something to something else.
It's sort of what trademark comes down to is you're trying to impose that you're saying the credit and sort of reliability or
ultimately,
of fan base you built up is yours because you did the work.
It's based on, and here's an interesting thing, is that I had no idea. I knew the Reanimator from the films. I had no idea about
the H.P.
Lovecraft.
And when
he published the first issue, I was like, oh, how cool. He's doing this because you had done the Chucky stuff and the other crap.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is so awesome. And knowing you and knowing how big of a horror fan you are, and I was like, oh, that must be really cool that he got this done. And then finding out about it. But I mean, that sort of goes to the heart of the suit, is that they're copywriting something saying that we own this and you're infringing upon our right to, or our ownership of it because you're selling your book on something we own. But the case, but that's not really
sure.
It's, I mean, because, it's very because you're
it's
selling
not the
it on
Lovecraft estate that owns this. It's not the people who made the movie
because
that owns this.
I mean, you
right.
look
it's
at that. You look
done,
at,
you've done business with the right
yeah,
people.
Exactly.
An opportunist has
it,
come
it,
in
exactly,
to make
exactly.
a buck.
It's somebody. It's much like
very well, lousy.
But
very
yeah, I mean that's the thing. It's like I mean I instantly knew what. You know, as soon as I saw the character on the front of the book,
sure,
the
you
cover,
knew it because
know exactly what it was,
and
exactly,
the worth
you know,
of the logo and the worth of the name of Reanimator comes from that movie.
Yes,
it's very easy to say, well, we trademarked it because of the public domain thing, but
right.
you're right; most people don't know that.
No,
I know that because I'm a nerd. horror fans may know that because they're involved in these sort of things. What it comes down to is just sort of like it doesn't necessarily matter who's right; it matters
no.
who was able to send in some
the
it basically matters
at the right time.
Paperwork
yeah.
Yeah. yeah it doesn't it right is not the thing so what I ask of the readers and the sort of horror fans is you know just you know you know how this goes you know what you care about you know I mean here a lot of what it comes down to is like in the 80s and 90s horror films were in sort of a piss poor state, 70s and 80s, 90s, and a lot of the most successful horror films were made by individuals
mm-hmm.
who made a film that said,
independent filmmakers.
Yeah, fuck you guys, your studio way of making a film is not the way I want to do it. So they made their own films. Then a studio picked it up. It became successful in its own way. A film like, you know, Halloween was an independently made
Texas
film.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Friday the 13th, and Reanimator. The difference being is that those films, except for Reanimator, were bought by studios. They have the legal backup of a large corporation.
Right.
If you fuck
Nobody's
with Halloween,
gonna fuck, yeah.
you're going to get Dimension up your
yeah.
ass. If you fuck with Friday the 13th, Time Warner's up your ass.
Okay. Good luck.
Okay? The animator is owned by one man, Brian Usna. Now, in my attempts to want to make a story that I cared about, I'd want to deal with the individual man himself.
Right.
I cannot say for sure what the impetus was for the other companies to do such a thing. But you as a fan know what made those films great. You know why you like Reanimator. You know why you like Brad Reanimator. You know what individual touch made those things beyond.
It has nothing to do with it's not the name value from H.P. Lovecraft.
It's the film value.
It's the film.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mean, it's
so, you know, obviously it just comes down to readers too. You have to support what you care about. You have to tell other people what you care about. Obviously, you know, right and wrong is sort of a loose interpretation in cases like this. No one is necessarily right or wrong legally. There may be a case on the other side. What it comes down to is, what do you care about? What do you support? You know, how willing are you to make that known? So I'm not asking anyone to sort of go out of their way and buy the book if you don't normally buy it. I am asking if you do buy the book, if you are a fan of Hackslash, if you are a fan of Reanimator Films, tell your retailer, tell them to order for you.
Here's four people that maybe haven't read Hackslash. Will these operate fairly self-contained? Can
oh,
you
absolutely.
Jump right into these? Okay, so
don't be
afraid to get these.
Sure.
And
I mean, I just you know I'm always sort of sympathetic to, you know, I know it's hard in comics. I know if you're a fan of superhero stuff, that if you go into the comic store and you see Hackslash, you're like, boobies and blood every issue. I don't know what the fuck. But I can tell you that we'd go out of our way to make sure that we make a book for comic fans, for horror fans. And, you know, I think we've been rewarded so far, you know, by being one of the few sort of independent books that does gain readers. I would like to gain more of you. I don't want to force you to it.
Hey, man,
you know.
your fan base is a lot of it is outside of the realm of comics. I've got my cousin's husband. They live in Rockford, about an hour west of here. And I told him about this convention that we're doing, and he's like, "Oh yeah, who's going to be there?" And you know, I mentioned, you know Gene Haw and Scotty, and no idea. I was like, "Well, Tim Seeley." He's like, "The Hackslash guy."
Well,
like,
that's good.
He's a huge horror fan.
Good.
That's he knows you
sure
because of Hackslash because he's a horror fan and
good.
He's not a comic book fan. So your yeah. fan base is definitely crosses.
But
different.
I mean, you know, I mean, for me, it's never a competition. It's never those sort of things. I mean, I feel like you know.
Well, you're of both worlds, man.
Yeah,
you truly are.
Well, and I want to combine. You know, my first love is comics.
I understand.
Second love is horror.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that
people of Something Beyond, and I love superhero stuff, I do, but I want to make sure that, you know, you have something, a choice, right?
Sure.
And I think Robert Kirkman feels the same way when doing Walking Dead, and I think Steve Nalis feels the same way. But it's very difficult for us to do those things, and I think most people understand that, you know, in a dominated sort of superhero world of comic books, it's very difficult. It's also very difficult because anything you try to do, and you're doing independent comics, this legal thing, which is totally new to me, becomes very tenuous, very difficult. So you need people to fight with you. You need them to say, you know, I care about these sort of things. I care about the creators of these things. I care about the value placed on this by the original guys.
Smaller things than this have ended independently.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And that's the other, yeah, I mean, it's such a small amount of money that people are fighting about. Sometimes it makes me so scared that, you know, like,
it's very angry.
You know, it's just so weird. It's like, you know, it's not that much money. It's not, I mean, I would certainly not be doing this to make a mint. I mean, I'm doing this because, you know, I would write Hackslash scripts anyway. The opportunity to work on a Reanimator thing did not make me any money. I did it because I fucking love those movies. You know?
Right. Also, for issue 15, is the incentive cover, is that still available? Or
yeah, I mean, basically, also, you know, the Joe Jusco cover, which I know John is a huge fan of.
It was awesome.
It's an awesome cover. It's sort of a homage to the movie posters.
No question.
For the Brian Usen films. Those are going to also be available for reorder through Devil's Due.
That's
our season desist. Incorporated involved the reorders for that issue because it had the Reanimator logo on. In fact, the 16 and 17 won't have a Reanimator logo on it. They would actually be outside of the lawsuit. But because it would have involved us having to get the okay of someone we didn't feel their contract was good for Brian Usna,
yes,
they are not going to be going through Diamond. That's just, you know, our sort of stance.
The only reason why I bring that up also is because you got this because of Jusco's equal love
for the films,
exactly. And I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, this really was done by a bunch of people who really love these films and want to honor
Usna
them.
Usna isn't making anything off this. Brian gave me the rights to this originally in trade for him being able to distribute it in Spain, where he currently lives. It was not done. There was no money involved. There was no trade.
Well, like I said, when I first saw the cover, I mean, Reanimator, you know, I like the Reanimator films. You love the Reanimator films. And there's certainly a segment of people that, you know, absolutely love those films. But it's not like you're using a property that is a hugely successful film. This is
right,
you're talking about
a cult hit
film. There's not that
owned
much
by one guy.
Right,
to the Reanimator,
right,
but that's what the suit, you know, I mean, that's what it, you know, it's like the, it goes back to what you're saying. It's like this small amount of money. I know why you did it. It wasn't because of that. It was because you love those movies.
Absolutely.
I mean,
it was really cool. I mean, and honestly, I thought of the perfect way to integrate it with Hackslash, which was, when I thought of that, I was like, I gotta fucking do this. I have the perfect way to integrate this. And it's, you know, obviously because, you know, when you work on a sort of independent book and you're sort of controlling the destiny of this whole thing, and you know, you're not sort of, you don't have a whole universe of things to play with. You have your own universe of things to play with. When you come up with something, you're like, this is the perfect way to do it. It is goddamn exciting.
Yeah.
You know, like, and the way that I was so excited and happy to be able to tie this into Hackslash is very important to me. The way that, you know, it's very, having Herbert be a part of, in a way, the Hackslash story is, like, huge to me.
Right.
And I know that Brian Usna is very excited about it also. I'm also friends with Stuart Gordon, who directed the first film. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, I've made and asked these right people to be like, are you cool with this? And they're excited.
Exactly.
You know, we're all excited. We just want to make good comics. I'm not making a shitload, you know, so I just want people to be able to read it and just tell your comic books retailer. Your comic book retailer is a cool guy. If you tell him you need it, you tell him you want it, he's going to do the work.
And at some point, it's just a point of principle. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like
you
do something for the love of it, for the joy of it, and then, of course, someone has to come along.
Well, and I understand the other company's desires, but I don't think they did it for the reasons that we did it. I think it was more opportunistic, and that's fine. I just think that, you know, if you feel like you're getting something that you weren't getting before, you need to support that. I hope you do.
So the URL one more time for people to order.
www.tinyurl.com/hackslash or www.devilsdo.net. Go to the store section. There's an ad on the front page. If you're a retailer, you can order the books in, I believe, packages of 4 to 10. If you are an individual, you can order the books by yourself. Please go through your comic book retailer first. Ask him to order it for you. If he won't,
Or can't.
Or can't go through yourself. So, and we will get you the books, I promise, and we will return to normal Diamond distribution with issue 18, which will be through Diamond.
Will you have
and what through Diamond? What month is that?
That should be January, give or take. Obviously, you know, that's what we're solicited for.
I think Matt Kramer is canvassing the lower Wisconsin state, getting people to order this.
15 has already come out. When is 16 and 17?
16, I mean, because we're distributing ourselves, that will depend on when we get final order cutoff. So we're going to go through all the stores that we can. We'll ship the book is printed. It's ready to go.
Will you have any at Windy City Comic Con?
Hopefully we will by then. Yeah.
Great. Oh, great.
The intent will obviously be we have to make sure that we get all the orders first. We have to know what people want, then we'll print the rest, and then we'll have a good idea, you know, of how many copies and stuff. Hopefully it's kind of close to what we've normally been doing. I'm not so opportunist, or I mean so optimistic that I believe that we'll actually sell more than we usually do, because that's crazy poops. But hopefully, you know, it'll be a good number, and, you know, we'll be able to get it to all the readers. If you can't get it, just things go horribly awry. I promise we will put it in a trade. It should be around /trade 7. If it has to be that, or omnibus number 3.
Is that, you know, you guys were doing the omnibus, and the first one sold out.
Yeah. Second one's coming.
Second one's coming. You're going to reprint the first one. Now, whatever this goes into an omnibus, are you guys going to have the same problem?
No.
You take the logo off.
You just take the logo off. It's that simple.
And
I mean,
that's
basically
what makes it so frustrating.
What a bunch of bullshit.
Well, yes. The thing is,
welcome to the legal
system. Yes, counselor, you're correct.
But the thing is, you know, the Herbert West character, no matter what, is public domain. So even if I didn't say it was with the movie crossover, even if I just said it was public domain, as long as I don't have the name on it, there's nothing anyone can do. I wish I could put the logo on.
Sure.
I mean, because I would like people who are just in a bookstore some night.
Well,
you
that's
know,
the eye catcher. Yeah, that's the point
that's
of a logo, is that it catches your eye.
But if I can't put it on there, that's fine.
Sure.
The stories will still be there. You'll still be able to enjoy the stories. You will still get the full story. You will understand, you know, Herbert West's connection to.
Could you just change the design of the logo?
No, it's the name.
It's unfortunately the name.
That's the thing about trademark. It's a mark.
Well, there's different
that
kinds.
That is used in trade. It's so weird.
There's different kinds of trademarks. I mean, you can do a logo,
the actual
design,
shape
the actual
of a logo.
Shape of a logo, or you do the words. The words are much more difficult to get because...
Sure. And obviously, you know, it's not even 100%. I mean, obviously, this is in
because Hackslash, the next crossover, will be with the Spider-Man.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. There will probably not be any crossovers in a long, long time. Though issue 18 does feature... I'll give you a little. This has only been revealed in this podcast so far. Issue 18 features appearances by a host of Image superheroes.
Really?
Yes.
Nice. Wow.
And they don't have to worry about those fuckers suing me because they're friends of mine. If they do, I'll just be like, really, Andy Kuhn? Suck a dick. But issue 18 will feature a host. It's not exactly a crossover, but you'll get me when you see it. It features an array of Image comic superheroes. Maybe a couple else thrown in there. I can guarantee Firebreather, and I can guarantee Wolfman of Robert Kirkman.
Oh, that's great.
Nice. You know, Jason Howard's going to be at the Windy City Comic Con.
Oh, I'll talk to him. Yeah. I can also guarantee Dynamo 5.
No,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Hey,
all right.
So, yeah. So they will appear. It's not exactly how you think it will be. And if any of those guys sue me, I'm going to just have to kick some shit.
Jay Ferber, you bastard.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well,
yeah.
That's awesome. That's exciting. That's
I think I better run, because she's pointing them both right at me. And she's got Japan animations. And I'm not going to fall for that disguise.
You
deserve it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Want to talk about some of your other stuff while we have you here for a couple minutes. Now, you're not just doing Loaded Bible and Hackslash. You're doing some Marvel stuff these days?
Yeah. I'm the artist, the new artist on New Exiles. I can see the trade right
what?
Now.
What?
New Exiles.
The trade, yeah.
You're
I'm
the
artist
series
the
artist?
Yeah.
What makes them new?
Yeah.
What makes the concept? What can you tell us that makes
it? What makes it new is that it's 100% Claremont all the time. Chris Claremont's writing it. So, yeah, they restarted the book after issue 100 with the New Exiles. I come on at issue 14. after a tough game to follow. Tom motherfucking Grummet.
Wow.
Really tough game to follow. But, yeah, it's actually a really fun book. What I really, I mean, you know, Mike Norton and I talked about this. It's kind of the perfect book for me because, you know, whatever sort of the most fun things for me are the craziest things in the Marvel Universe. I mean, I would be the guy to do, like, Devil Dinosaur or you know, Sleepwalker. New Exiles happens to incorporate the weirdest crap.
Oh, sure.
Of the Marvel Universe, which is great. I mean, well, it's an alternate universe and, you know, this just lots of characters and alternate versions of characters.
It's Marvel's multiverse.
Yeah, exactly. And I got to draw...
Which I think is a perfect book for Chris Claremont to do,
absolutely,
too, quite honestly, because he doesn't have to worry about current
continuity
or anything like that. He can just do whatever the hell.
And the storyline that I'm drawing, I think it's Claremont kind of really hitting it. It's sort of combining some elements of his old class of work and then just some really weird...
Now, I assume you were a Claremont fan, X-Men fan.
Yeah, I mean, the weirdest thing to do is to sort of be working on the script with a writer who was one of the original sort of... I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I mean, it was all about the
Claremont. I'm sure he's going to love to hear this.
Yeah.
When I was a kid reading
this
stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, yeah, anybody... I worked with Bob Salvatore on the Dark Health stuff, and when I said, when I was a kid, I read your novels, he said, well, how old were you when you first read it? I said, oh, 12. He said, fuck you. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to make anybody feel aged.
But I'd imagine it's exciting for you to work
on. It is really cool, and it's really weird to... You know, a lot of things about cool thing about Exiles is that it's sort of... gets to reiterate some things. You know, Chris can kind of do different versions of storylines he's done before.
Sure.
You know, right in the current storyline I'm working on, sort of plays with some elements that he said about, weirdly, for Psylocke, when I first started reading X-Men, you know, like sort of, you know, elements that were sort of put for that character with her, you know, multiple identities and stuff. Mm-hmm. To be illustrating that, when I remember going to the local Target when I was a kid, when it first opened, to pick it up, you know, is really weird. But, yeah, I mean, it's really a kind of exciting thing. My editors are really cool. I'm pretty sure I got the gig because my assistant editor was a Hackslash reader. So I think...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, weirdly enough, it may be the first time in history.
Tell you what, the Exiles fans are passionate.
Oh, I went on the message board.
They do not screw around.
I went on the message board to sort of be like, hey... the new artist guy, I just want to say hi.
No, I like, don't fuck it up.
Yeah, totally. Like, instantly, like, well, we would like to see these costume modifications made. I'm like, ah, I can't do that.
You're going to be working with Chris Claremont on a book with an X in the title, and I noticed you're growing a beard out. Do you plan on having some sort of major fight at some point with Chris and, you know, never speaking to him again for about 3 years?
Nice.
Something like that.
Are
maybe,
you burning me? Well, the weird thing is, you know, because this book for me is, you know, I'm so, my expectations were sort of working with something beyond. I mean, I worked in indies for 6 years, you know, so my anticipation with working with a corporate comic book company was going to be like, oh, it's going to be really rough, and it's been the easiest experience I've had, which is kind of ridiculous, but I think I'm, you know, the editors that I understand what they need, and I've worked on licensed properties. I mean, I worked on G.I. Joe forever, so I know not to put giant penises on things.
Come on,
I know, yeah. So like, you know. It's weird that my previous training is actually sort of helping me.
Sure.
In my previous experience of my life before comics was, previous training has only made me worse and more of a fuck-up.
finally, it's paying off.
It's finally paying off, and, you know, sort of understanding, and, you know, just working with some really... One of the cool things about working also in indie comics is that a lot of these guys aren't I don't want to say fully trained, but they're a little loose with their scripting and stuff. And, you know, I mean, I know how I write scripts, but I've worked on some scripts where I was like, that ain't how I'd fucking do it. So I'm really, like, prepared to do different style scripts. I'm prepared for the Marvel script. I'm prepared for the Chris Claremont script. So I'm ready to go, you know.
You're not working Marvel style on this, though, are you?
No, I don't know.
Because I know that he worked like that for a really long time. That's how he and Byrne worked on the X-Men for years.
This
with
is
Marvel
full script,
style.
So
I was going to say, I talked to Jeremy when he used
sure
to work with
that?
Them.
Oh yeah,
on,
yeah.
Excalibur, and he said it.
Yeah, they're full script.
When we talked to Byrne, he talked about working Marvel style.
Yeah.
On that.
With Claremont. Are you sure he didn't do Marvel style before that?
Yeah, because they were credited as like co-creators.
Yeah, actually, I remember his message board where he was saying that he would Claremont would turn in like almost like a novella, and he would translate it. I don't know, you know,
Byrne was credited as a co-plotter on that.
Sure, and, because he's breaking down the
story. That was just the power of
Claremont scripts, Byrne pencils, and they co-plotted.
Well, it's also the kind of fun thing too is that part of I think my you know, my research for doing working with Chris was I went and picked up, you know, the old, I mean, that stuff I already had, but I picked up a trade like the Phoenix stuff and like, how did Byrne translate these things? How did Jim Lee translate these things? And just being like, you know, kind of like, I mean, because something exists beforehand, a lot of times when I worked with other writers, it was like, well, it was just, that was how we did it. But knowing there's a precedent makes my job a lot easier.
Some big fucking shoe precedent.
Big fucking shoe precedent. Yeah, totally. So.
Well, I'm happy for you, man, because I think you are one hell of a talented artist.
Well, thanks, man.
I
mean, I guess we'll see.
This will expose you to other people. And,
well, this will be the amazing thing.
That's not an easy book, dude. That's a lot of freaking characters.
It is a lot of characters. Yeah. And it's a lot of, like, variations on shit that you have to really know your stuff. But fortunately, I know my Marvel pretty well, and... you know, I mean, this will be the interesting thing is I've worked so long in indies is, you know, dropping me on a superhero book that's, like, really a superhero book will either show people that I'm a pretty substandard superhero artist or, you know, like, I hold my own. I don't know. It'll be up to you guys to decide. Obviously, you know.
Fine.
Yeah, we'll see.
And like I said, I think it's a perfect book for you because it is, you know, wild and crazy stuff.
And
seeing your stuff, you know, I mean, you do crazy, you know, like, you can draw just about fucking anything. I mean,
well, yeah,
it was
we'll see. Yeah.
Stuff, I remember talking to Scotty about this when he first started on the new X-Men, and he said his first convention after that, he definitely felt the X effect. Are you ready for the X effect whenever you go to
you
go
to
cons?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and no offense to X fans, but and I think you probably are very dedicated people, but no offense, I think G.I. Joe fans are way crazier.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And no offense also, I think Forgotten Realms and Dungeons & Dragons fans are way crazier also.
Are they going to fight? Are they going to fight over you is the big question.
Well, it's one thing, one of the things when I talked to my editor was sort of like, well, you know, can you handle a little bit of controversy? Where I was like, please.
I worked on Dungeons and Dragons, bitches.
Yeah, I mean,
take the pressure.
I did
the
Suicide Girls comic. I'm fine.
Are you kidding me? I had to roll an 18 for charisma one time. It was terrible.
Totally. I mean, like, nothing I've done has not been without its sort of dedicated, you know, fan base. And I think, you know, if you don't work in something in comics that encompasses that, I encourage you to do so because I can't
imagine what the Chucky fandom is like. I mean, that's got to be fucking insane.
Yeah,
I mean,
even that.
There's hardcore Chucky fans.
Totally.
Go to a Raiders game.
But even like something like that, I mean, anything you do, you're scrutinized. The only thing that I could have done in my entire career as a comic creator, pretty much the only thing I've done that didn't have a preset group of people was Hackslash.
Sure.
So, I mean, I wrote fucking G.I. Joe Transformers crossover, and believe me, I got raked up the ass for
you
that.
You did Loaded Bible.
Yeah, jeez.
I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of fans of Jesus.
Clearly Christ would not do that. Obviously, you haven't read the New Testament.
So more passionate Jesus fans, Transformer fans.
Transformers
fans. I don't
know how to answer that question. Well, the weird thing is with... the one thing I really awesome about Jesus is if they don't want to see it, they just ain't going to buy your book. Transformers fans buy it even if they hate you. So even if they're like, Jesus fans will be like, nah, it's not my Jesus. Transformers, your Transformers too fucking bad. Jesus. They're going to buy it and write you a fucking letter.
Jesus fans just don't believe it exists.
Basically.
It's not canon.
But on the other hand, I probably got more positive responses for my portrayal of Jesus than I got for my portrayal of Optimus Prime. So there you go.
hey, your Jesus was badass.
But I think he was in character. I think a lot of people think my Optimus Prime was, well, I don't know, whatever. Fuck you guys. I liked him.
He wasn't big rig enough. All right. Well, hey, we will definitely keep people updated on
thank
the
thank you guys
issues.
For agreeing to do this sort of thing. But Readers, you know, this it's sort of up to you in this sort of weird way that I'm sure you're not used to having shitty responsibility dropped on you. But I swear I'll deliver. I work my ass off. I will continue to work my ass off. I will write Hackslash.
And Hackslash
from
is a good
a
book.
Box.
And it's a good book.
Thank you.
Go
I'll
and
write it
it's
from
fun.
A box. I will write it from a box if I have to.
Earlier in the show, you had requested that all trannies come to the Comic-Con, to Windy City Comic-Con, to see you, and you would give them a free sketch. Now, what
free sketch for trannies.
What if trannies with with issues 16 and 17 of Hack Slash show up at your table, what do they get?
You got if you can already get that stuff, you will get a sketch. Well, and maybe you want to slow dance. We'll slow dance. I will slow dance with the first trannie with issue 16. And I'm not. I'm so for the rights of any transgender individuals. I'm not making fun of you. I'm serious. I will draw you a sketch. You come to my show. You come to get on my booth. One of my favorite Hack Slash cosplayers is a transgender person. Is a fella named Faith DeBrook, who does one of the sexiest Cassies you've ever seen. So I have wow.
Nothing
but respect.
Respect for the,
nothing
but respect.
And on that note, John, how did your interview with Dave Gibbons go?
Well,
from Trannies to Dave Gibbons.
It was great. You know what happened? And it was so weird because it's connected to my day job of radio. The guy who hosts the Mix nighttime show in Chicago, an adult contemporary music show, is a huge Watchmen.
It's a lot of Michael Bolton.
His name is Jeff Quarter. No, Michael Bolton, actually. No, a lot of American Idol crap.
No, okay.
I'll be honest with that. A lot of Jonas Brothers.
Sweet.
But anyway.
That's adult contemporary? Jonas Brothers?
That's adult contemporary.
I don't recognize. I never thought I'd get so old where I wouldn't recognize the contemporary music world. Welcome to 43. I don't know what it is. Well, anyway, Jeff is a huge Watchmen fan. And when he saw the motion comic on iTunes, he was really excited because he doesn't buy as much now. He'll buy the occasional trade here and there. And always asks me what's good now lately.
Right.
And is really interested in Jeff Johns' Superman, a lot of the mainstream stuff. But he loved the motion comic, really enjoyed it, and was disappointed, and immediately bought the season pass to get all the subsequent issues. And just a couple of weeks ago was like, where the hell is issue two? And I said, I don't know. And he goes, well, who's the animation company doing the motion comic? I'm like, I don't know. And he said, well, find out. And I said, well, I'll try. And he is just such a net freak, internet freak. He tracked down the animation comic exactly himself, went to their message board, and spoke to Jake. And I'm sorry, Jake, I don't remember your last name, but said, what's going on with the comic? And the guy explained, well, we've changed some animators. We were delayed. They also did want to build an audience before going on to issue two because they were kind of creating this new product out of nothing.
Right.
And obviously the response on iTunes has been amazing, and I guess Amazon Video also carries the motion comic.
Dude, it's featured on Apple's Live homepage.
There you go.
Yeah, they're serious about it.
So, but he said good news, you know, we're coming back in October. And he just happened to mention, my friend said, oh, you know, my buddy John does this podcast, Word Balloon. And Jake said, oh, you know, actually we do listen to John's show. We like John's show a lot. And he said, oh, you know, I can ask if you'd be interested in being on his show. So he asked me, and I was, of course. So I talked to Jake through email, and he said, listen, let me just talk to the Warner PR people and, you know, make sure that it's okay with them, and, you know, we can set something up. 2 days later, I get a call from Warner's, and they're like, we'd love for you to talk to Jake down the line. Any interest in talking to Dave Gibbons? I'm like, yes, of course.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny, because earlier in the year, I did happen to get contact information for Dave and just approached him and said, you know, hey, I'd love to talk to you sometime. Whatever. And he said, you know, we're doing so much. You know, obviously the film had already been announced by then.
Sure.
The trailer
busy
hadn't
guy.
Come
He's
out.
A busy guy.
But actually what he said was, we're doing a lot of product to tie into the movie. And he said, really, the last quarter of the year might be a good time to talk. So, you know, he goes, if you don't mind waiting, he goes, let's talk, you know, near the end of the year. I said, sure. And I figured, well, the movie's coming out in March, so maybe I'll bug him in December or something like that. Well, then this opportunity came up. He was at the Birmingham International Comic Show, which just happened last weekend. And that's a really one of the bigger British shows. And I talked to him it was great. We set it up. It was 6:30 his time, 12:30 our time. So we got him, you know, right in the early evening. He had been done with the day. And it was fun. We had a nice half-hour conversation. He was great, really charming, and very funny. And also with the promise that with his book coming out, Watching the Watchmen, which comes out by the time this podcast will be out, actually, I believe this week, the book will be released. We're going to do a follow-up and get into more of his non-Watchmen stuff. But it was great. He's awesome, and I'm really happy for him because much like David Lloyd with V for Vendetta, this byproduct of Alan Moore taking himself out of the equation.
The artists are getting
exactly. They're getting the spotlight, and that's, you know, it's a two way street. Obviously,
absolutely.
As you know, Tim,
well,
writer artist,
definitely for Watchmen too.
Well,
yes,
that
was a concentration of very. Concentrated effort in art. That's probably not
no
repeated.
Question. No question.
And, and
that book's not the same without
that.
The
that
art.
Yes. I feel that, you know, that is obviously Moore's genius, but Dave Gibbons is.
Not everybody can do that.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
Gibbons,
wow.
I think, you do want to talk about co-creator with Watchmen, and obviously it's you know, Alan Moore script and his idea and everything, but I'll tell you what, they worked extremely close together in developing that world, and especially,
sure.
I mean, you see it in all the backgrounds and everything. I mean, that
and the
tangible,
sequence.
Yeah, the yeah.
You know,
I mean,
the way he went from panel to panel and
yeah,
page
yeah.
to page.
Oh, absolutely.
And we talked about that. And that was, you know, and if you remember, too, because I know I talked about it here when we were first discussing the motion comic. I mean, you hate to be a snob, a comic book snob, but it's like, as much as I like the motion comic, I'm like, it really does kind of take away from what Dave had established by having each individual panel and the progression of panels,
sure.
as opposed to having motion to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, you know, that language that he came up with for the panel and page is, I mean, I've sat through a million comic convention panels where people have discussed the way Watchmen is laid out, and they're like, that is a textbook of how
sure.
a comic script and you know, breakdown should happen in a book where nothing is wasted.
But on the other hand, you know, maybe there's sort of that, maybe the wonder of people, you know, people are probably more willing to check out that motion comic. But when they come back to the comic, they might be like, holy shit, there's more to this comic than the motion comic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow, they probably
that's going to turn
really
a lot of people
yeah.
on
well,
to
some people in some comics.
The new hardcover is gorgeous, by the way.
Absolutely.
On that, the trades are there, the absolutes. So those things are going to sell.
Well, and he even said, because that was a concern of his, that he first saw the motion comic and wasn't sure, and he showed it to friends, and the comic pros all kind of felt that same way of, oh, it's a shame, whatever. But he said it was the non-comic fans that were just really like, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And even
yeah.
in his family.
And I think the way
you
that
know,
they did
turn around and pick up the graphic novel, you know, that has done more than
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Well, and I also think, I mean, even what you say is obviously makes sense, that it, you know, it takes away from... It takes away from what he did in the comic, but at the same time, because of the way that they developed that animation, there is the sense of the panel to panel to some degree.
Oh, yeah. No,
I mean,
you're
it's
right.
certainly a unique thing, but I think it still gives you a taste of the sequential art. You know
well,
what I mean?
Speaking,
to some degree.
And speaking with Jake,
it's a good primer for it.
They care. I mean, this company is really trying to do right by the story, and really, Dave is very involved. He gets not only. The animation as it proceeds, but also looks at the script as it's being written. Dave has input in terms of how they are, because they are kind of adapting the script. It isn't word for word from the graphic novel, so that's important. And I think you know, it's obvious that he is involved. He's still an outsider, but he is an active consultant.
Oh,
really,
absolutely!
You know,
I think he's been involved quite a bit. Of, you know,
oh,
with
yeah.
the film too. I mean, he's been
definitely,
you know,
and he talked about that as well, and that was cool. He they had the showing as we're recording this last week in L.A. of certain scenes of The Watchmen,
mm-hmm.
and they did the same thing earlier this week in New York, and Dave attended the New York screening of it. Now, he has already seen the rough cut of the film, the completed film, and he said it was about 2 hours and 45 minutes, and
wow.
of course, he's blown away.
Wow.
And he's really, you know, pleased with how well
he's
Zack Snyder
did. He's going to make a shitload of money off of that.
Yeah, you know.
Fucking good for
yeah.
him.
No,
yeah,
and, you know,
no,
and,
fuck
and,
yeah.
And absolutely. I mean, he's really one of the nice guys in comics who really has been this incredible creator for
oh,
decades,
yeah.
going
yeah,
back
absolutely.
To the 70s.
No question.
And I mean, you know, this is really cool. And that was the great thing, too, because as much as, you know, Warner's is like, you know, we really want you to talk up the motion comic. And, of course, you know, you do what you're supposed to, and that's fine. But we did have enough time to talk about a little bit about the originals and also that Superman Annual number 11
mm-hmm.
that was being made as they were planning
right.
Watchmen. And really, as I say in my interview, if you put the two issues together, you see that kind of sequential art
mm-hmm.
that makes Watchmen what it is in that Superman story. That's the Mongol story that they...
Oh,
yeah,
what do you give
for
the man?
Oh, the man
everything.
From
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, my
it's,
favorite story of the
it, it really is. Yeah. It's really one of the great Superman
yeah,
stories.
Man. Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, it was... Yeah, it was
so
really fun
that,
to talk
that,
to.
That's the one... That's the one adaptation that's gone to TV or movie
right?
that Moore actually liked.
Exactly.
Was it the JLU where they did that? Or
Justice League.
He liked it.
Yeah, Alan Moore actually liked it.
Yeah, he was on, it was on Fanboy Radio and said that he really enjoyed the cartoon.
I mean, like you said,
the plant thing, so scary.
The byproduct, the black orchid.
The byproduct product of Alan, you know, stepping back and taking his name off everything and not wanting to be involved with any of the films, is, like you said, is that the artists are becoming more prominent and well known because of this stuff. But to some degree, it is. I mean, I guess it's only a shame to me because I'm such a big Alan Moore fan, but I mean, the guy really should be, with this movie coming out and
enjoying
himself. He should be celebrated for the brilliant creator that he is.
I think he's still
saying outside of comics. But
I've even read like Hollywood Reporter stories and stuff, and Alan and name is always on there.
No, I know, but it's not the same. I mean, obviously he doesn't want it.
It's not like Frank Miller is now with
After. But you know, like one of the things I read about Alan Moore was one of the things that he. Because, you know, with The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, when that film came out, there was a lawsuit where a script that was similar sued the production of the film because they said, well, we did the same thing. And Elmore had to go to the fucking, you know, he had to go to this
court case.
God-awful court case. I mean, talking about law bullshit stuff.
Sure.
I mean, Elmore going, what the fuck am I doing here? I could give a shit less. This is not a, you know. And him having to attend the shit. Yeah, I understand why he's so pissed off.
Absolutely.
You know, and look, this is a guy who really just wants to sit in his house and read a lot of books and write some shit and, you know, do some...
And be left alone.
Do some awesome tantric shit and do whatever, you know. Like, God bless him, you know. Like, you can understand why he doesn't want to get involved in... Once you go to this crazy bigger world where everything is recognized, you're a target.
Yeah.
You know?
You're absolutely right about that. You know?
And also, I think a lot of it too. I think the last straw was during V for Vendetta when Joel Silver irresponsibly said, "Oh, Alan's 100% behind it, and he really loves what we're doing." And it's like, no, I never said that. And you know something? Fuck you. And by the way, DC, fuck you. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's
just a shame of the whole situation.
You can understand it though.
Probably the finest comic book writer out there is not.
He's getting his own little perverse jollies, though, of saying, take my name off of it, and you can give the money you're giving to me to the producers. Because I heard a BBC interview that he did where he said, I really like seeing the look on their faces when it's like, he doesn't want money? Well, then what does he want? We can't, you know, and it's like, I want nothing from you. Right. I want nothing. And they're like, we're not used to hearing that. Everybody wants money. The rest of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is going to come through Top Shelf locally. Yeah. He's only going to deal with small publishers to take himself out of the bullshit that comes with.
I can't wait for that.
It's just an unfortunate situation all the way around. That you know,
yeah.
He doesn't produce more work. He doesn't. I don't know.
He's got some pretty. Pretty awesome projects coming from Top Shelf.
I know.
Yeah, I'm curious about the direction.
I tried to get him to write the / Suicide Girls annual, actually. I called his ass.
Yeah.
Well, because my idea was sort of, you know, he doesn't want to work for big companies. I'm not a big company. This is a creator-owned thing. Involves sexy goth girls. I thought, man, that should be a
fucking show.
There you go. Sure. He was so busy. His rep was very nice about it, which was, yeah, you know what? He probably would. He's just very busy. And I was like, oh. And understandably, you know, he's working on a bunch of shit. But I was like, I'm going to fucking try it. Fuck it.
Hey, what the hell, man?
I'm going to try it.
Give it a shot.
Why not?
Good for you.
So, yeah, it was a good experience. And I look forward to my next conversation with Dave. He was really, really nice.
Awesome. Very cool.
Awesome.
I will be listening.
So, actually, it's going to be, if I may, real quickly. This is going to be a nice month. Chaykin is coming in a couple days.
Nice.
And Gail finally
come.
I could, like, throw.
Who would have thought Dave Gibbons would be easier to get than Gail Simone?
Exactly. No kidding. Exactly.
Damn it, Gail, get offline and talk to me.
No, I gave her a massive guilt trip just 2 days ago, and she's like, I know, I'm sorry. I'm like, you know, I got 50 questions sitting on my message board that are just like getting.
Can I write you some questions for Howard Chaykin?
Sure. I came to Dark Tower last weekend to pick up the hardcover of Flag. To catch up because I don't have my old issues anymore. So, yeah, I had to kind of brush up.
I got all mine.
But I'm ready with my Squadron Supreme.
Nice.
Including next week's issue. So I'm ready for that. And who else is coming up this? Oh, you know, Marty Pascal is coming back, pardon my spit, because Marty DC. Yes. He, much like the Marvel Vault that came out last year, Roy Thomas wrote all the stuff for that. Marty wrote the DC Vault.
Oh, nice.
And that's got a lot of interesting tchotchkes in it, just like the Marvel Vault did. And I'm looking forward to that. And, yeah, Marty wrote the book on that. It's going to be fun.
Oh,
to talk
you always
about.
Love talking to him.
He's a blast. Well, and he's just one of those guys, like you were saying about Claremont. Marty and Marty Lenween and Walt Simonson, I mean, those were my guys. And, in fact,
Mark Wolfman?
Mark Wolfman, certainly. When we were in New York for the con this year and everything, I mean, I just ran into all three of them talking amongst themselves, and I'm like, oh Jesus, this is awesome. I'm like, yes,
yeah,
and
like,
I got him for a quick
like
hit.
Boner making.
It was. You know, thank God the pants were an extra size so they could fit and accommodate the boner. But no, it was great, and they are.
You're gonna get a new sport coat this year for New York.
I know. You know, I had a better one. It's just that it was dirty, and I didn't realize how ridiculous that stupid coat looked.
Oh no, it looked
video.
Very ESPN circa 19.
You know what sucks?
fucking Chris Berman covering a Cleveland Browns game.
Yeah, you're right about that. You know what's sad, too? I'll still get people who will see my Grant Morrison mm-hmm. interview. And I know I bob my head anyway a lot. But Jesus. I mean, because that interview was so spur of the moment. And it was, you're either talking to Orson Scott Card or Grant Morrison. And we need you up here now. And I'm like, okay. And I literally like ran up. Like, all right, we're going to talk in like 2 minutes. It's Grant. I'm like, okay, All-Star Superman, Batman RIP. What else?
Yeah, it's a little tough.
You know, and really, I mean, it was like, okay, fine. And off the top of my head, I tried to do this 10-minute interview with Grant. And he was awesome. But I look like I've either just done a line of blow, you know, or shot up some, you know, heroin. I'm like, so great. And my head's like moving like a speed bag, you know, and Ali's like pummeling me while we're talking. Oh, and everyone's like, man, I'll tell you do great radio interviews, but your video interview, you kind of look like an idiot. And I get like at least one or two emails like that a month. Like, yeah, I know.
I saw you like 5 minutes after that interview, and you look like you had just come out of like a Russian bathhouse.
I'm sure I was.
Red,
I was
sweaty. And
Yeah. You have all my sympathy for that.
I appreciate it, man. Oh. Well, yeah, and God, you that weekend, you were like sick as a dog, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you had the flu that
I didn't
weekend.
Have sauce in my pants, but still.
There you go. But no, I will. I promise for my future video interviews, I will be much more composed.
New jacket.
I've learned my lesson. But sadly, YouTube will be the bane of my existence.
Forever.
Yes, because it's up there and it's not coming down anytime soon.
That was a great interview.
On the other hand, to be fair,
sure.
You're interviewing Grant Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? You should have just went fucking weird. You should have been like completely non sequitur and halfway through it, done like
what
a,
some people are
like a head over heels jump.
I'm like, well, that's
just taking your pants off and stood there and be like, hey, I'm doing it.
The green monkey has flown through the door.
People were saying, you didn't really ask him questions. You're like, so, Batman RIP.
Go.
Yeah. Like, all right, well, you know, it's a story and it's great and, you know, but.
He
no,
doesn't
was,
need much
But prompting. I settled down. Larry Hammett was fun. And then when I talked to my...
Oh, Larry's a damn charm.
Larry was awesome.
You know, I have a great, weird thing. I went out to eat at a Polish restaurant on the west side of Chicago with Larry Hammett 3 weeks ago. And I was realizing, like, my God, I'm eating cheap, shitty, deep-fried Polish food with the guy that made up G.I. Joe.
Pass the pierogies.
Yeah. He was bringing his daughter to... She's going to school in Chicago.
Oh, that's
and,
awesome.
Yeah, and... you know, he was dropping her off. He's like, oh, let's go get some food. So I took him to crazy fucking buffet-style
Star
Polish restaurant.
Polish buffet.
Oh, there's nothing like Polish buffet, man.
Man, greatest food ever.
Bring on the blintzes, man.
XRT's totally. Old neighborhood was right by all the, like, the Orbit Room and all the great Polish
bars. Yeah, like,
on
we
the
went to the apple something. It was amazing.
Cabbage rolls.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm getting hungry,
was, it was the sad thing was I was like, I'm eating my food. I'm like, when I was 10, if I had known... That I would be sitting here
someday, eating a knockwurst,
crazy, shitty, fucking, awesome Polish restaurant, up to my ass in Blintzes, having a conversation about politics, drunk off my ass. I would really been surprised.
Go Joe,
Larry. Go Joe. Yeah, exactly.
Larry's a man, absolutely.
All right. Well, I tell you what. Let's pull this sidecar over and wrap this guy up. Email us. We talked about this last week, so please email the show info@aroundcomics.com. We want your questions because we're running out of shit to talk about. Want to know what you think and what we think
about. It's comedy.
Yeah,
I mean, Wednesday is something new to talk about.
All the Hackslash stuff. Once again, www.devilsdo.net.
Right, that's the website to order it. If you want to go directly, it's www.tinyurl.com/hackslash. Hackslash is one word. It's not a slash. Slash is a slash. And, God,
even I am fucking concerned.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom Caters will be back next week as we record from the Windy City Comic Con. You can also check out Tom versus the Flash a couple times a week as he walks you gently through DC history, one issue at a time.
I can't wait for Tom versus Tarot. Ooh. That's what I'm waiting on.
Tom versus Tarot.
Tarot versus the Black Rose?
Yeah.
I will be on that episode. I'm a regular reader, man. I like that book. Boom, bees.
I'm on 11 o'clock comics every Thursday or Friday, whenever that comes out, with Vince B. and David Price and Wood. And actually, this week I'm...
I'm on Twitter.
You're on Twitter. Yes, you're on
Twitter. Every day, pretty much.
That's my article at iFanboy.com, Comic Shots, now comes out every other Thursday. So this Thursday,
Jeez, you guys and all your plugs.
There will be a comic shot. Actually, this is the 12th. This is the 12th edition.
Day of Christmas?
No, 12 comic shots and 12 plays through the entire theme this week. So
let me guess, what comic?
No,
I wonder what it could be.
All right, want to thank everyone who joined us here at Dark Tower Comics today. Dave Wachter, Kyle Bice, both guests.
Thank you all for making me feel good about not having anything to do on a Friday.
There you go. Mark Beatty, thank you as always for hosting us here at the wonderful Dark Tower.
Is he even hearing someone at home?
Crap, there's Norton and Hank and everybody. All right, everyone have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back next Monday with Windy City Comic Con reports. Go get those pre-registered tickets and come out to the Center on Halstead this Saturday at 10 o'clock.
I'm going to have an over-under bet on what time Chris's head explodes on Saturday. I'm thinking it's going to be about 3 o'clock.
Multiple explosions.
3 a.m. Wow. God damn. It's like a carpet bombing.
will it be a boof or just a
Chris will just turn around and be like, what is that popping in my ears? Did you hear that? Like popcorn.
Dude, the vein on your forehead is huge.
I'll be all right. I'll have some medicine with me. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be a great time.
It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, it is.
I wish this would replace the other Comic Con.
We're working at it.
Might.
We're
working at
it. Let's see. Let us get past the first year.
All right, right. Just saying.
Give us two or three of these. All right. Everyone, have a wonderful week and weekend. We'll be back next Monday with a full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in.
And around comics.
Nice. Be right.
Wake up. Got another day to get through now.
Expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.
quite honestly, but that's another story.
How much does it cost for you to come by with a plunger, a midget, and a goat?
We'll be right up, Mr. Salazar.
That's $5.75.
That's a 46. Don't worry about it.
Same goat as last time?